Everyone, this is Mike Quinsey, Connecting the Light. I say good evening because I'm in the UK and it's 10 p.m. in the evening. I guess for most of you possibly listening in, you're somewhere around midday or in the early hours of the afternoon. Now that Sheldon Neidl is back, we are getting our regular messages. So without further ado, I will start the program by reading out the best part of this week's message. Difficult always to edit it down too much because I find it's very informative, and this week's is no exception. The message this week, which comes through Sheldon for the Spiritual Hierarchy and the Galactic Federation, reads as follows: that your realm is in transition, and thus what appears to be of dire consequence on your world is in fact merely a dismal diversionary tactic paraded before you by the dark. It is vital that you are not distracted from your daily tasks by these occurrences. Our mission includes helping you to become more conscious. True inner awareness begins with the practice of staying in your center and intuitively viewing your world. Rather than being informed by external appearances, listen to your inner awareness, which can discern what is right at every step. As you learn to trust this inner voice, you become more able to perceive what is true and what is not. This also permits you to tap into your reservoir of patience and to not be pulled into your media reports about current situations. We keep reiterating this to you because change is inevitable, and a very different reality than this is just around the corner. The coming shift in expanded consciousness demands a new world that is linked to your spiritual and space families. This new reality has been approaching you for some decades. In the post-World War II era, this movement toward change brought about the rise of a large family of nations. The former European powers needed to acknowledge the emergence of a new global reality. This rapidly developed in a sort of incubator of humanitarian needs. These dire conditions produced a number of visionary individuals from these relatively poor new nations who came forward to propose creative solutions to the serious problems confronting this group of nations. The Third World was the label given to these poorest nations by various international market economists. The proposals of these Third World humanitarians are now integrated into the plan of action proposed by our Earth allies. Remember that a central component of personal sovereignty is the ability to respond in a positive way to the most pressing problems in one's community. When acted upon, this ability ripples through the community and creates the conditions for the essential changes to take place. In this case, the change is to occur on a vast scale. It allows for a shift in the global reality that is seen by most experts as impossible simply because it has never been tried before. The truth is that this period in your history is marked with unprecedented events. The ones that we alluded to above are just below the horizon and ready to sweep into view. Our Earth allies have worked hard to get to this point. This success is to be accompanied by a campaign to reconstitute and redistribute the physical wealth of the world. This move is an attempt to fully redress the myriad transgressions of the dark throughout your history. Wealth has been an effective tool for controlling and manipulating you. Now this tool is to be used to support you in your quest to better comprehend the nature of your limited consciousness and return you to your rightful state of full consciousness. Now, note the following couple of sentences because I think they carry quite some impact here. And it reads, full consciousness is achieved the moment you understand the workings of the physical realm, and equally how heavens interacts with it to fulfill the plan. And it reads on, this is the goal you have set yourselves. Our role is to help you in this and, at the right divine time, to appear en masse in your skies as a sign of your coming global enlightenment. We therefore view first contact as a divine symbol of your great victory over the dark. Seen in this light, we can easily adapt our mission to the vicissitudes of present-day human nature. Your global society is growing towards the light in immense leaps and bounds. This increases the numbers of newly anointed seekers and far outstrips those who lapse back into a kind of self-imposed slumber. Even here it is gratifying to note how these sleepy ones reawaken to return to the fray. All in all, your world, despite the misdirection of your mainstream media, is vigorously pursuing this upward path and putting enormous pressure on your dark establishment. The pressure has helped us greatly in carrying out our diverse tasks. Our Earth allies are most grateful for your help and wish to know that some amazing things are very close to happening. And again, here is an important part. Reading, know that a secret timetable is in effect to be met by all parties directly involved, and that a joint task force is presently coordinating this effort. And it reads on, our aim is to expedite first contact and disassemble the dark power structure that has long controlled your world. Now, it's been said for some time that the space people do have authority to come with divine authority and intervene should it be necessary to bring an end to the happenings on the Earth. So one has to assume from that that there is at least two possible endings. But it's interesting to know that there is a secret timetable and everyone is working to it. I have to think that it must be before the end of the year, and then that would come in line with the projected first contact within that time period. The message reads on, first contact is not merely a coming together with your space family. It signals the moment to begin celebrating the approaching dissolution of your time in limited consciousness. It is also the moment to unveil the suppressed truth about many things, about wondrous technologies, the realities of your planetary circumstances, and about disturbing inhumanities. Through all this runs a common thread, the rise of humanity toward heaven and the approach of the right moment for a massive disclosure of our presence. You will see that this disclosure results inevitably from the changes in abundance alluded to. The essence of this message is simply that a consciousness shift of unprecedented magnitude is creating the conditions for a metamorphosis in your reality. This will inevitably throw up a series of startling disclosures, one of which will be our first contact with you. This path of cause and effect that you are on requires our tangential involvement to reach its divinely ordained destination. Life on your world is made up of degrees of consciousness. These varying degrees of divine awareness are the reason why heaven permitted this grand experiment to be carried out. But you are by no means simply victims or guinea pigs. You are all willing participants who came from all sections of physical creation to be part of this. Humanity is a physical and spiritual conglomerate with scrambled genetics and an unplugged spiritual connection. And yet, this unlikely minestrone was cooked up for a purpose. It was to become the groundwork for completing this particular creation. Your coming together and overcoming such challenging obstacles is proof positive of the validity of this apparently illogical proposition. Now you can see the true meaning behind the present ferment throughout your globe. Out of this stew, you can see arising a new global vision, and soon you will have the power and means to bring it forth. The prime component of any reality is the power of the collective. A reality is forged by consciousness. This collective energy is set according to the primary beliefs held by you. You function within it on an individual and a collective basis, but it is the latter that is important. Here we can usefully apply a principle of quantum mechanics by drawing a parallel between the interrelated actions of electrons over great distances and the similar workings of consciousness. Each unit within the collective is affected by the actions of each other unit, creating an interconnected physical whole, a collective awareness. In a limited consciousness environment, the same forces similarly apply between units of spiritual consciousness. Spiritual and physical consciousness are acutely interconnected. All these mutual interactions weave the tapestry of the given reality. The beliefs held in common are the crux of the matter. In your case, your shifting beliefs have reached critical mass. Moreover, when dealing with spiritual consciousness, a sort of 100th monkey syndrome kicks in. These two factors indicate how close you are now to this long-awaited shift. In truth, the human collective already resonates with this shift. All that remain are the resistance factor and the point in the divine plan. The plan for the shift of this reality is successfully playing out around you. The resistors are, of course, the dark ones. Their intent, as you know, is to assemble all the like-minded and the doubters, circle their wagons and stretch out the shift process as long as they can. The result is what you see around you. Only by putting things in the larger context can you clearly see what is going on. And always remember, together we are indeed victorious. And that is where I will end the Sheldon Neidl message for this week. A lot of interesting facts have come out from that. And I think it really needs reading, that message, on a number of occasions. Now, I'm moving on to general news. I've got quite a few items there, and I'm hoping eventually in the program to get through to the spiritual messages, and I've got a really good one this week from Archangel Michael, which I didn't get time to get round to last week. So, without further delay, the general news brings up an interesting report which comes from AlterNet, that is AlterNet, and it's talking about two strange deaths in the European wiretapping scandal, and this came from an article produced by Paola Pontinieri and Jeffrey Klein of the New American Media, and it was posted on the 19th of June this year, printed on the 21st, and if you want to read it fully, because I'll give you a fair bit in the way of extracts, you can find it on the alternet.org website. And it concerns Adam Bove, who is the head of security at Telecom Italia, and on July the 21st this year, he told his wife he had some errands to run, and he left their Naples department. And hours later, the police found his car parked atop a freeway overpass, and Bove's body lay on the pavement some 100 feet below. Now, he was a master at detecting hidden phone networks, and at the direction of Milan's prosecutors, he'd used mobile phone records to trace how a special removal unit composed of CIA and SISMI, which is the equivalent Italian CIA, of agents who abducted Abu Omar, an Egyptian cleric, and flew him to Cairo, where he was tortured. And the Omar kidnapping and the alleged involvement of 26 CIA agents, whom prosecutors sought to arrest and extradite. And the whole subject electrified the Italian media. The US media noted the story, then dropped it. And the first Italian press reports after Bove's death said that the 42-year-old had committed suicide. Now, about 16 months earlier, in March 2005, Costa Vladikidis, a 38-year-old software engineer for Vodafone in Greece, had just discovered a highly sophisticated bug embedded in the company's mobile network, and he found that spyware eavesdropped on the Prime Minister's and other top officials' cell phone calls, and it even monitored the car phone of Greece's Secret Service chief. And other people's bugs included civil rights activists, the head of Greece Stop the War Coalition, journalists and Arab businessmen based in Athens. Now, Vladikidis was, according to his friends and family, excited about his work, and on March the 9th, 2005, his elderly mother found him hanging from a white rope, tied two pipes outside of his apartment bathroom, and his limp feet dangled a mere 3 inches above the floor. And his death was ruled a suicide, and he, like Adam Abode, left no suicide note. Now, some short comments on this, in this article. According to Tarnia, a Greek newspaper, Vodafone CEO privately told the Greek government that the bugging culprits were US agents. And because Greece's Prime Minister feared domestic protests and a diplomatic war with the United States, he ordered the Vodafone CEO to withhold this conclusion from his own authorities investigating the case. Now, in both the Italian and Greek cases, the spyware was much more deeply embedded and clever than anything either phone company had seen before, and its creation required highly experienced engineers and expensive laboratories where the software could be subjected to the stresses of the national telephone system. And Greek investigators concluded that the Vodafone spyware was created outside of Greece. Now, Germany's Federal Intelligence Service, BND, recently snooped on investigative journalists, and according to parliamentary investigations, the spying may have been carried out using the United States secretive Bad Aibling base in the Bavarian Alps, which houses the American global eavesdropping program dubbed Echelon. Now, they're asking the question, were the two alleged suicides more than eerie coincidence? And they say that a few of the press in Italy have noted the unsettling parallels, but so far, no journalists have been able to overcome the investigative hurdles posed by two entirely different criminal inquiry systems, united only by two prime ministers not eager to provoke the White House wrath. In the United States, where massive eavesdropping programs have operated since 9/11, investigators, reporters and members of Congress have not explored whether those responsible for these spying operations may be using them for partisan purposes or economic gain. And they say as more troubling revelations come out in Europe, it may be more difficult to ignore how easily spying programs can be hijacked for illegitimate purposes. The brave soul who pursues this line of inquiry, however, should fear for his life or her death. Now, that's, I think, rather disturbing, but we've come to realise that the Secret Services do not like to be disturbed in their work. And I have to think perhaps the Mafia are more open than the CIA. I'm guessing that you probably know where you stand with them. But with the CIA, they seem to be a total law to themselves, and when people catch on to what they're up to, I think they are soon warned off. Even at the threat of death. Anyway, I'll move on from that one to a report by Heather May and Christopher Smart of the Salt Lake Tribune. And this is one that came up just yesterday, and it's talking about a crowd of thousands that cheered Salt Lake City Mayor Rocky Anderson for calling President Bush a dishonest, warmongering, human rights violating president, whose time in office would rank as the worst presidency our nation has ever had to endure. And the group, including children and elderly, some howling from throughout Utah, then marched to the federal building Wednesday to deliver a copy of a symbolic indictment against the president and Congress for abuse of power and failure to uphold the U.S. Constitution. With their signs labelling Bush, Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice and Secretary of Defence Donald Rumsfeld, the axis of evil, calling the Iraq war a mission of lies or comparing the invasion of Iraq after September 11th to invading Mexico after Pearl Harbor, the estimated 1,500 to 4,000 protesters hoped their demonstration at the Salt Lake City County building sent a message about the reddest state in the country. The report went, and quote, if they, referring to the Bush administration, lack support in Utah, my God, they're in trouble, said the Reverend Tom Goldsmith of the First Unitarian Church of Salt Lake City when talking to the lively gathering between protest songs and banner waving. And for those who didn't get enough, organizers held a Rock Against the Rumsfeld concert at a Pioneer Park in the evening, and between songs, Salt Lake singer Colin Robinson challenged Rumsfeld's Tuesday speech to the American Legion. Critics of the war were equated with Nazi sympathizers. And how dare he? Robinson asked the crowd of over 300. What about Aru Garrett and Guantanamo Bay? Who's the Nazi? The mother of an Iraqi war veteran on his second tour, Debbie Johnson, told the crowd they need not heed the Orwellian doublespeak of the administration. The war is illegal. You don't have to support the war to support our troops. And earlier in the day, Anderson started going hoarse while speaking, often yelling to the anti-Bush throng for 35 minutes. At times, his message strayed from an anti-war theme to criticism of federal policies on illicit drugs, global warming, tax cuts, and Hurricane Katrina. So there we are, a little reference to September the 11th. But the people are waking up and they are demonstrating against the Bush administration. Now, what I thought was a very interesting report came out of which I'm only going to quote a small part. And you can find this on a website called timesonline.co.uk. I was quite surprised it managed to surface because of the nature of the report. But it comes from the Sunday Times World, 27th of August, and it was an article that was talking about the humbling of the super troops shatters Israeli army morale. And the article mentioned that 63% of the Israeli wanted the governor of Olmert to quit. And the article read that Aviv Wasserman, a reserve major with the 300th Brigade, who is about to study for a doctorate at the London School of Economics, asked Peretz not to throw them into unnecessary adventures. And Lieutenant Adam Keemer of the Combat Engineering Battalion was in even more rebellious mood after being asked to take his men and clear the road leading to Bin Jabal from the west. This is in Lebanon, of course. And studying the plan, Keemer rejected the idea because 10 Israeli soldiers had already died there, and he said, we were foolishly told it was all right. There are no Hezbollah forces ahead of us, said Corporal Nimrod Diskin, one of the Keemer soldiers. And he says, we didn't have the equipment to clear this road. We were not ready for the mission. Now, when the brigade commander realized that Keemer and his soldiers would not carry out their orders, he called the military police. And the men were sentenced to 14 days in jail, although they were released a few days later. The soldiers, most of them fathers of small children, believed Keemer saved their lives. And Keemer said, I've noticed behavior I've never heard of in the Israeli army. And he said that on Israeli television. And he said, in my training, I got used to the idea that the commander shouts advance, and this is the first to face the enemy. Here my battalion commander was in the back of the group, and the brigade commander didn't even cross the border into Lebanon. And it apparently came out that some of the troops that were reservists, of course, that were sent to fight in Lebanon, had only had 1 week's training. So there we are. There's a lot more to that report, but if that's whet your appetite, I'll repeat again, the website is timesonline.co.uk. Now, mid-August, an email went around which was referring to a report by Anthony Wade, who is on the website opednews.com, opednews.com, and he was talking about, as he calls it, the Rovian political ploy and why it will no longer oppress America. And it reads as follows: that such is the case with the current powers that be in this country. Make no mistake about it, America, the GOP is desperate. They see the president's approval rating at 33% on good days, and know that the American people disapprove of the Republican rubber-stamp Congress even more. If the Democratic Party was to take control of even one House of Congress, then the party is over for the GOP. What comes with losing complete control are real checks and balances. For the first time in 5 years, Congress will actually do the job the Constitution laid out for it, and oversight will return. No longer will Bush be allowed to run roughshod over the civil liberties of the people and decide which laws he will enforce and which ones he will ignore. Subpoena power will return to America, and real investigations into allegations of illegal governmental activity will come back to the people. For the first time in 5 years, it will be in America's interest that will be so, not the elite in power protecting themselves as they rape the environment, reap the lion's share of the economy, and ruin the fabric of our democracy. The article goes on to say that the plan is pretty clear for the Rovian machine. Paint anyone who does not support the war efforts as cowards, who are weak, on security, and cut and runners. I understand why Rove would play such a card, no matter how ridiculous it may be. First of all, it has already worked for so many years. Why abandon it? And secondly, it is the only card the GOP has left to play. America this time will be smarter, however. Making them empty their liquids online for flights will not be enough this time round. Here is the dirty little truth the GOP hopes you forget this November. And the article goes on to say that Iraq had nothing to do with 9/11, terrorism or Al-Qaeda. No matter how many plots are foiled, it does not justify the Iraq war, and America knows it. Don't think for a second that this foiled plot will be the end of it for the GOP. There may be another Osama tape released just in time to help GOP candidates, like he did in 2004 to help Bush. There may be more chatter and elevated terror alerts. Time to bump positive Democratic stories from the front pages. Unfortunately, there may be another event designed to catalyze the American people into such a fearful state that they run to the polls to vote Republican. What Karl Rove has not figured out yet is that America is onto them. If there is another foiled plot, they will be able to see through the facade and understand how the political laws are using it for their gain. If they see chatter and elevated terror alerts, they will also look to see what stories the media machine are trying to bury. God forbid if there is another event, the American people will realize that it only validates that the Republican Party cannot protect them anyway. And finally, Anthony Wade says that unless they try and steal the elections again, that he believes that the mind of the oppressed has awoken to the truth and a new day is dawning over, as he calls it, our democracy. And if you're wondering who Anthony Wade is, apparently he's a contributing writer to opednews.com, and he's dedicated to educating the populace to the lies and abuses of their government. He's a 30-year-old independent writer from New York with political commentary articles seen on multiple websites. And he is also a Christian, progressive and professional rehabilitation counsellor working with the poor and disabled. And he believes that you can have faith and hold elected officials accountable for the lies and excess. So there we are. have another one that surfaced on the internet, where most of these articles come from. I get so much I don't really have to go on direct to the sites, but this is a short extract for which I do not have the, yes I do have the original source. It comes from National and World News page on someone's site that isn't mentioned, and it simply says that the US government was closely involved in the planning of Israel's military operations against Islamic militant group Hezbollah, even before the July 12 kidnapping of two Israeli soldiers. And the New Yorker magazine reported that in its latest issue. So that's evidently where the original report came from. I have another here by Natasha T. Metzler, who is an Associated Press writer, and at Washington she reports that thousands of people gathered across from the White House, even though the president was out of town, to condemn the US and Israeli policies in the Middle East. And speakers in Lafayette Park energized the mostly Muslim crowd with chants and speeches condemning Israeli involvement in Lebanon and Palestinian territories, US support for Israel, and US involvement in Iraq. Occupation is a crime, the crowd chanted, equating the situations in the three areas, but they also called for peace and justice for all. We all stand united against the violence and the killing in the Holy Land, said Ezam Amash, president of the Muslim American Society, a co-sponsor of the demonstration, along with American Arab Anti-Discrimination and the National Council of Arab Americans. There is no difference between Muslim life, Christian life, or Jewish life, said Esam Amash. And it is noted that also in San Francisco, about 2,000 people marched in support of the Lebanese and Palestinians against the Israel military action. And that's basically the nub of the report. And I'll just add one final comment that apparently former Attorney General Ramsey Clark drew cheers from the Washington crowd when he called for President Bush's impeachment. Now, you may have heard me mention in the previous program that a group of Labour MPs were reported as making various comments when they came out in support of some that were made by Prescott, and there were no less than about some 20 MPs that made various comments that were published on the 18th of August in the Independent, and they were asked what they thought of John Prescott's outburst allegedly against Bush, although he denied the full story. I just thought I'd mention that again, because it's nice to know that given the opportunity that people in that political party are not always in favour of what Blair does. And in fact, we hear today that he's still refusing to say when he will go, and it is strongly suspected that he will hand over the leadership to George Brown. So I will carry on. And there was an article circulated that I just extracted one part from, because it refers to a story that I've mentioned on two separate occasions, and that is the ambassador Leo Wanter and his authority to claim the $4.5 trillion settlement that is or was due to him on July 31st. We haven't heard any more news about that, so I suppose that matter has gone legal. But this comment just adds to the story by saying that observers say to watch for the bigger picture, as Wanter's exposure of the misuse of trillions of offshore money could have reverberations worldwide, leading to a possible shake-up in the Federal Reserve banking system and the roundup to justice of many high-level officials who have been illegally using trillions of dollars behind the backs of the American people and the people of the world. That's mentioned, incidentally, that they mention that in the federal courtroom of Judge Deborah Batts, going back to 1989, that Bush Sr. arrogantly stood up in front of lawyers and said, when confronted with the possibility of the exposure and elimination of his illegal cash cow, which is the Federal Reserve, he said, "Over my dead body will this ever happen, and I have a $300 trillion war chest to fight it." So there we are. They saw that as an admission that he was using those funds. Now, another article, which is only an extract that I can't actually tell you who originated, but it was talking about the Blogosphere Unites in Pursuit of Masked Senator. And it refers to something that happened just before the August recess, when the Senate was set to vote on a bill introduced by Senators Barack Obama and Tom Coburn that would create a public searchable database of all federal grants and contracts. And it was envisioned as a Google-like website which would provide free immediate access and information which otherwise can be alarmingly difficult to obtain. And the Senate Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee unanimously passed the measure on July 27th. And this bill seemed to be speeding its way to full Senate passage when, in the dark of the night, an unknown senator placed a secret hold on the bill. And according to Senate courtesies, the bill will never come to a vote as long as the hold continues. And the question is, so who's the culprit? And there's no answer at this stage. But, I think politics is always a bit that way, but I'm really quite amazed that in the Senate you have such a hold that can be put on a bill that's passing through, and evidently there are no reasons given, and the person who does it evidently is not allowed to be identified. I find that quite remarkable. Now, today, being September the 1st, I hope I'm right on that. Yes, September the 1st, is being called upon to be impeachment day. Now, maybe something has happened today, which will be reported in the coming days, that will tell us that something of that nature happened. But it arises from the website called impeachnet.net, and it relates to Democrats, progressive Democrats of America, and after Downing Street, asking people to hold a vigil for impeachment on Friday evening, September the 1st, preceded or followed by a meeting to discuss and plan for camp democracy. And it gave a few sites where you could enter your event online, and you could search for an event which might already be planned in your area, and they spoke of where you could get some resources, which is from Camp Democracy, on campdemocracy.org site. Now, if you're interested in knowing if there is an event already planned in your area, you can find the details on the website tinyurl.com. So that's a popular one and quite well known, so I wouldn't think you'd have any difficulty in finding that one. So I'll speedily move on to what I call my UFO section, but it covers anything of that particular nature. And I'll start with, yet again, one that's, I say, to use the phrase, is one that got away. And on August the 13th, there was a report which came through Dr. Richard Boylan, and I have mentioned these previously, which spoke of there being an ancient star craft that would fly across the planet as a symbol of truth in a public demonstration of the Federation's benevolent intention and as a sign of humankind's collective history with the star people. Now, we heard that it was delayed, and I don't think we've heard anything further over the last week. But I noted from this particular extract from the announcement that carried the details that it does say that in order for humans to finally become aware of advanced races, a person called Captain Namor has been granted permission by the High Council of Star Nations to perform worldwide demonstrations in a starcraft light years beyond the technologies of Earth nations. And it reads on, the starcraft was removed from within the Great Pyramid at Giza in Egypt after having been kept there in safekeeping for many thousands of years. The late Edgar Cayce spoke of a hall of records under the Great Pyramid and Sphinx, and Namor, a star person himself, said, but even more impressive was the fact that this hall existed, not underneath, but inside another dimension, accessed from within the pyramid. So there we are. I quite thought it was a physical craft that was hidden there, but I'll accept that until we have any further proof. So I thought that just threw a little bit more light on what the what was behind this flyover. Another one that got away was one that came through Jess, and the source was the Ashtar commander of the Galactic Fleet. Now this goes back a little while to this. To the 7th of July when the message came through, but the point was that they spoke of things that were going to happen and were designated to be achieved by the end of July. And they do go on to say that heaven will allow us to intervene if need be. And they were talking of the importance of this happening, which was determined by a council they call the Council of Overton, which is above and beyond the power of the Galactic Federation, and even spoke of Christ Michael being bound to the time scale. But apparently nothing came of that one. I haven't seen anything more that's come through Jess or any other source to give an explanation, but maybe something of that nature will still surface. Going back to my old flying saucer reviews, from which I usually give an extract of some sort of UFO contact, and these all go back to the period in the mid-1960s, I have one here which I've pulled out, which was the account of someone called Fabio Dines, who was age 16, who on Thursday, the 14th of September 1967, was proceeding on foot to the furthest blocks of a hospital where he was going to try to sell some metal window shutters. And he walked along a path between two rows of poplar trees, and as he reached a particular building, his attention was drawn to the presence of a strange object, and he said it was roughly the shape of a mushroom, which was standing in the middle of the pitch, and curious, he went over to it, thinking it was some experiment connected with the military recruiting wing, and suddenly, with a faint, indefinable sound, from the sides of the cupola, there dropped down to the ground a transparent screen, which appeared to him to be made of glass, and visible behind this screen was a sort of drum, which was the base of the spherical dome-shaped cupola. In a fashion which he found it impossible to explain, there appeared in the cylinder an opening slowly from the bottom upwards, and it was an aperture through which two strange individuals emerged side by side. And Fabio said that he stepped momentarily stepped back, and the voice said, "Don't run away, come back." And he was face to face with these strange beings, and at a distance of about 5 meters from them, he watched one of them make a complete turn around the cylinder, while the other one said to him in perfect Portuguese, "Appear here tomorrow, otherwise we will take your family." Now, the other individual joined the first one again, and he was able to observe him too, and saw that he was carrying on the right arm an instrument that was pointing at him. Then the man who had spoken to him turned towards the door, gesturing to the other to follow him into the cylinder. And they disappeared into the darkness of the opening. The opening closed and the transparent curtain went up again into place. And with some sort of sound that it made when it was descending, it went back into place. And then the machine began a slow, silent, vertical movement. And Fabio started to run away terrified. And he said he caught a glimpse of it flying at an oblique angle and still slowly when he looked back for the first time. And then when he looked back a second time, the object had already vanished. Now, the individuals are described as being from around 6 foot or so tall, with human form and human proportions and robustly built, clad from head to feet in green tight-fitting clothing, similar to that of divers. And all that was visible of them was part of the face with greenish skin, two large eyes set wide apart with no visible white part, and surmounted by thick triangular-shaped eyebrows. There's a new one. The mouth and nostrils were not visible, and there was a dark part of the helmet running across in front and screening them off. And from the base of the screen there was a tube which ran down over their chest and as far as the right heel, and then rose up the back to the nape of the neck, and the heels were swollen in a strange way. The fingers of the hands, which were likewise covered by clothing, seemed to be thick and to be four in number, and the only differences noted by him between the two individuals was the antenna projecting from the head of the one who had spoken and who seemed to be the leader and carried what might well have been a weapon. And Fabio's attention was caught by the ease with which the individuals moved, long rapid strides and the feet lifted off very high from the ground. And on the bottoms of the heels it seemed to him as though they had a sort of iron heel which flattened the grass when they trod on it. It was concluded by saying that Fabio declared that after the object had taken off, he ran to the bus stop to go home and tell his mother of the threat hanging over them. And he was quite terrified. But once he was inside the bus, he reflected on the state of the health of his mother and decided to try and see the police. And he got to the police station about 45 minutes after the incident had occurred. And his statement was very brief. And the police went searching around for some evidence or other on the dry ground and the bone dry grass, and they perceived two small depressions in the form of an arc of a circle lying a considerable distance, that is, one from the other. Near one of them there was a slight depression shaped like the heel of a rather large shoe, which Fabio reckoned was the footprint of one of the individuals. And he said the nature of this mark was not such as could either confirm or eliminate that possibility. So that was the end of that sighting. Unusual one, because to my knowledge, I don't think any ET contact has resulted in people being threatened. And if you recall, Fabio was threatened that if he didn't stay there, his family would be taken. It all sounds rather serious. Now, I've got one final ET item here, which I think I've got just enough time to read, which means once again I can't get down to the spiritual messages and the one I've got from Archangel Michael. So maybe next week I alter the schedule around a bit to get some of those in, because I think they're important. Now, this article came out on the 22nd of August and refers to a report that came off the eseti.org site. That's ECETI.org, and it was talking about enlightened contact with extraterrestrial intelligence. I thought this was a very good one. It started off by referring to an unprecedented event which was unfolding in a small town known as Trout Lake in Washington. saying that this event had the potential to change the course and destiny of humanity and Earth, and that the people of Earth are being offered a chance to join the rest of the universe in peace. He was talking about them offering the technologies to end disease, clean up and restore the environment, fuel-less energy technologies, and the virtual keys to utopia have been disseminated and are waiting for distribution and production. A whole new world is unfolding for those with the courage to accept it. Contact with spiritually and technologically advanced extra and ultra-terrestrial off-world visitors, which we refer to as the Greater Family of Man, has occurred at the home of James Gilliland, known as the Satvar Sanctuary. And ABC, Fox News, the History Channel, Evening Magazine, and other cable channels, too numerous to mention, have covered the ongoing contacts at the sanctuary. Radio shows such as Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie and Art Bell, Jeff Renz, and many others have all covered this incredible, verifiable event. There have been thousands of eyewitnesses, some of which are prominent scientists and physicists, astro, nuclear, bio, and plasma physicists, have all witnessed these events. Aerospace, Air Force, design engineers, professional photographers, and investigators from the world have come to observe the ongoing UFO activity at the sanctuary. And apparently there is a long history of UFO sightings in the area going back as far as hundreds of years in Native American lore. Now, Trout Lake is now internationally known as a UFO hotspot. Is located at the base of Mount Adams, which by chance happens to be where Kenneth Arnold saw the number of luminous discs as they descended on the western slopes of Mount Adams in 1947, from which the famous word flying saucers has been coined. Now, Dr. Alan Hynek, Greg Long, Bill Vogel, David Ackers and many other investigators have documented a long UFO activity covering events from sightings, contacts, large luminous objects which are inquisitive, follow vehicles and demonstrate themselves to be under intelligent control. Within these reports were sightings by fire tower operators, forest rangers and local police, people from all walks of life, and they are continuing to come forward to witness the ongoing events. Now, CSETI with Dr. Stephen Greer, PSI application with Steve Marino and two other independent groups were all present when not one but four immense triangle ships flew over the sanctuary along with other brilliant UFOs, all of which were filmed by multiple witnesses. And there are large volumes of photos and literally hours of footage and ships hopping, taking off at breakneck speeds, making right-angle turns, throwing off tremendous energies, expanding to several times their original size, and responding to the people below, showing they are under definite intelligent control. And they say the evidence is in showing, beyond a shadow of doubt, UFOs are real, and ongoing contact is unfolding at the sanctuary. They talk of the different phases that these contacts and the showing are being made, and they talk about the last phase, which is to create a template, a galactic exchange center like none other, where full interface and exchange of wisdom and technologies can occur. And this sharing or interface will assist humanity in a quantum leap in evolution, thus joining the rest of the universe, the greater family of man, in a bold new adventure. I think it's a wonderful report, and when you think of the evidence there, isn't it surprising that the media or other TV channels haven't picked up on this? You would surely think that to be a major happening in the world, but that simply proves the massive cover-up that the governments and the media have put in place. Well, that's my time. It's up for this evening, but next week I'll definitely make sure I get some of the spiritual messages in, because I think they're important. So, I will thank you for being with me. I do hope you enjoyed the material that I've used. God bless you all. Thank you.